November 1st, 2020. I may be wrong, but I believe they're changing the clock in the States tonight. Am I right, or is it tomorrow night? Mark Weiner, what's the story? I can't hear you. You're off. Okay. You'll tell me later. And Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll be back to 7 hours. Jack, I want to say to Jack, to Yaakov Levenstein, you asked me about Corona. If you can pick up, there's Yahadut B'Avad, it's put out by Machon Meir. And the last page are all questions they asked Rav Shlomo Aviner about Corona, and he tries to answer them. From all that I've seen and listened to, I have nothing to be ashamed of. My talk, at the opening talk right after Pesach, when we went on Zoom, was why Corona, and so far I haven't been able to see anyone who can come out better or be more sure of his answer. So we're all in the same boat. Also, interestingly enough, I gave Haskama this morning. I wrote out a two-page Haskama to a volume that's going to come out on Corona. It's by Chaya Passau, if the name means anything to you. She was a madrichar in Gold in the early 70s when I was teaching there. That's when I first met her. And she married my first Talmud in Israel, Michael Fould, who died young. She's now in a beautiful second marriage to Professor Eli Passau. They live in Katamon. And the book is a collection of letters that she wrote each day to her greater family and friends. And it's quite an insightful volume, quoting a lot of Maimonides Chazal, general literature, Jewish history, trying to make some sense out of what we've been going through. Okay, now I just want to return to the question that we threw in sideways, and it certainly is a question that attracts attention. I don't want to take out a year and a half again just to talk about it, but the question of Yom Tov Sheni. And of course, if you paskin like the Shulchan Aruch, you can fly out of Israel on Yom Tov Sheni, arrive in America, remain at the airport, and only then go on to Lawrence or Teaneck or Englewood. That's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, that until you come to a Yishuv Yehudi, you can do whatever you want. There's you're an Israeli and you belong to Israel, even though you're standing in the United States of America. That's one opinion. What I said I didn't like is people who double-talked me that they landed, took a cab, and they went to Teaneck, and they arrived there Yom Tov afternoon, and I said, but it's a Jewish community, Mechalel Yom Tov. They said, no, what Mechalel? The driver's a non-Jew, and he carries out our suitcases, and we jump out of the taxi. That's what I said at Teretz Van Bapa. All right. The other side of the coin is, of course, if you paskin like the Rav, like the Chacham Tzvi, and the way I don't have to go through all the Achronim who hold like this, then, of course, you fly out, but you're now in Chutz Laretz, and they hold it's not who you belong to, where your citizenship is, it's where your feet are. And here, it's a real problem. Rabbi Grunstein tries to say, and there are Achronim who say this, that even if you hold the Shita, that Yom Tov Sheni is where you are, but still, the whole concept of Yom Tov Sheni doesn't begin until you reach a Jewish community. So you fly out on Yom Tov Sheni, you're taken in Chutz Laretz, but you don't see a Jew, and only when you land, then you don't want to go to Lawrence, remain in the airport. I have a problem with this, and here's where life runs against us, meaning very simply, those of you who have learned Shas and Paiskim, Halavai, I could ask my Rebbe the question. And my question is very simple. The Rav, there's a picture in the Rav by a guy named Rakefet, I don't know if it's in Volume 1, Volume 2, but that picture, Irwin Shapiro is leaning over to ask the Rav a question. It's at a Ritz dinner, I think in the late, I give you the date, I believe, in the caption under the picture, it's late 70s, early 80s. What is he asking the Rav? He's saying, Rebbe, I just bought an apartment in the Plaza Hotel. What do I do when I go to Israel? Do I observe one day or 2 days? And the Rav said to him, as only the Rav could, Urban, you don't fold Kedusha into your pocket like a handkerchief. And of course, what that means, that in Chutz Laretz, Yechayev and Yom Tov Sheni, there's Kedusha Tayom. The Hasidic world, and Yoshua showed me another source, but I've quoted many times the Shulchan Aruch Harav, the Tzemach Tzedek. Hasidic world learns that in Chutz Laretz, the rays of God have to be stronger to penetrate the gullus, to penetrate the chulin of Chutz Laretz. So you need 2 days to feel the real Kedusha of Yantef. That's in Chutz Laretz. When you come to Israel, in Eretz Israel, there's no Kedusha Tayom. That's what the Rav was telling Irwin. It's not a handkerchief. And that means that in Eretz Israel, you observe 1 day. You want to be frum and give cover to the Shulchan Aruch, so don't do Malacha D'Oraita on the second day. All right, I would like to ask Rebbe, where does Chutz Laretz begin? Is it the minute you fly out of Lud, or is it when you reach a Jewish community? And this is what troubles me. I'm inclined to feel, from my learning, my understanding, what I just quoted to you from the Alter Rebbe and from the Tzemach Tzedek, and I quoted in detail 20, 30 years ago, it would seem to me, the minute you leave the airport and go in, across the Mediterranean, you're in Chutz Laretz, period. And therefore, for someone who paskins like Mori Rebbe and Chacham Tzvi, Reb Chaim Briska, Rav Kook, etc., etc., you can't fly out on Yom Tov Sheni. Now, I dealt with the Shaila many years ago. I know the concept, you begin the Yom, it's wasn't Kedusha. So how do you suddenly get Kedusha? There was a real Shaila. One of the ships of the Mapilim arrived escaping the British on Yom Tov Sheni. And that was an unbelievable Shaila. People are getting off the ship, on the boat, they davened Musaf, they davened everything, and they're arriving in Israel, it's Isru Chag. And that was the Shaila that was dealt with. And it's a low pashut. But the heart of the question that I would like to ask the Rav, if I only could, and you know, the Rav cried in a tshuva drasha, what he would give to have only 5 minutes more to talk with his father in learning. But this is life, this is reality, and I would love to ask Rebbe, where does the boundary begin? And you can go on with many, many variations of the Shaila. For instance, and Rabbi Grinstein showed me the Eretz Chemda with their answering emails, how to deal with this. What do you do if you leave, let's say, Australia, or you leave, you're crossing the dateline, and suddenly you're flying for 2 hours over countries where it's yet Shabbos. And then you're in a new dateline, and it's Friday or it's Sunday. And what do you do while you're flying over Shabbos? Fascinating, interesting question. I'll deal with it later today in the context of Reb Menashe Klein. But here I want to tell you a true story that actually happened. And this story, I think, is food for thought. About 40 years ago, my brother called me Friday and said, my nephew, who's my Talmud, is not just my nephew, he's my Talmud, Dr. Zev Rothkopf. And my brother Levi said to me, Ani, Zevi said to tell you the story. He said, you'll understand why. So Levi tells me about 40 years ago, he and Zevi left Israel for the first time since they came in Aliyah. They came in Aliyah in 73. We came 69. They came 73. And why did they leave Israel? It was Zevi's first cousin's bar mitzvah in Brooklyn. In other words, part of the family is Charedi and Borough Park, with all that implies. And a good part of the family, the majority, Kanayin Hara, are here in the world of religious Zionism. So my brother and his nephew went to the bar mitzvah. They flew out Yom Tov Sheni. No one asked me, a Shiloh ever? Yes, told him, no problem. Flew out Yom Tov Sheni. they arrived in JFK, and they were waiting there for Yontif to end to take a cab to Borough Park. They didn't want to go there. You know, the psak of the Shulchan Aruch didn't want to go into Borough Park while it's still Yontif Sheni. And on the plane were a slew of chassidim, Israeli chassidim, who also were flying to America. Maybe there was a fabrengen, maybe there was a wedding, whatever the reason was, a great deal of chassidim. And now they're all in the airport waiting for Yontif to end. And my brother says a typical Bronx Jew, might have been a survivor, an immigrant, his native language was Yiddish. You remember last week, Rupture and Reconstruction, a little bit he still remembered of the old country and of the religion he threw away in America. And here he is flying on Yontif, Mechallel Yontif, doing every Issa Derabbanan of Yontif Sheni. And he sees all the Hasidim, he sees my brother clean shaven, comes over to my brother, and he approaches him in Yiddish. Ich hab nicht in mein ganze Leben gesehen, es azach, as chsidim soll mechallel sein Yontif. Wie tut man das? And he says, how? I never in my life thought I would see chassidim being mechallel Yontif. How could they be flying on Yontif Sheni? And on Yontif, he didn't. So my brother said he tried to explain to him, Chutz Laaretz, Yontif Sheni. He said, the man was an Amaretz, a boor to the second power, didn't understand anything. But Rupture, before the Reconstruction, this man at least remembered on Yontif, Eilich Yidden, from a Yidden, don't fly on Mechallel Yontif. And this poor guy could have had a heart attack seeing all these Hasidim in the airport waiting for Yontif to end after doing every malacha to the Araita, right? It's only the Rabbanin on that day, etc., etc. So that's a beautiful story, and that raises a different question. The minute you land at the airport, could be it's forbidden. You're landing at JFK? I would say a miut hanikar, 40% of the people in the airport are Jewish. You all know who flies. You have to be middle class, upper middle class, high class, upper class. Jews all over the place. Jews flying, Jews running back and forth. Lo aleinu, mechallel Yontif, mechallel Shabbos. It's America. Pamela Harris, her husband is flying. Nu, what do you want? And maybe you can't land in the airport. You've already come to a Jewish community. And this Jew from the Bronx, with his Hamish Yiddish, his Yiddish that you could see, this man was raised properly in the old country. Boy, he's right. What are my brother, my nephew, and the Hasidim doing there? All right. Now, let's pick up where we left off. Last week, we dealt with Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and there's no question that the Rupture and Reconstruction, and this issue, he and Reb Menashe Klein are in total agreement. Reb Menashe Klein stands his ground, gets in, the people can't understand it. In other words, so you add a little frumkeit. What are you so upset about? What is it? You heard the Al-Yava? You can't weigh, you can't measure, you can't see. For sure you should be Yotzei, a mitzvah d'oraita of Achilat Matzah, a mitzvah d'rabbanan perhaps of Mora, Bisman Hazeh. What's wrong if you measure? And he's adamant. It troubles him so, it reminds him of the curses in the Torah. Ad kedei kach, total agreement with Rupture and Reconstruction, Reb Chaim's masterpiece. Then we spoke about again the problem of chametz and the goy, and this is a problem that's insoluble. I can tell you, Yitz and I were raised in Bnei Akiva. So Yitzhak may remember there were many lectures we used to get on how to build a state, and Bnei Akiva, I don't know today, but at that time, they were totally opposed for being samach on goyim. And their attitude was, If God gave us a Torah, we should be able to live the Torah without the help of any non-Jews. Eitz Chaim hi l'machzikim bo, and no one, we shouldn't be dependent upon anyone else. L'may nafkamina, Elliot, you're going to wonder, what's the nafkamina? Milking cows on Shabbos, that's when this issue first came up. It was a tremendous issue in the 30s, into the 40s, into the 50s. Today, the issue has been solved because of modern technology, the milking cow machines, even the irreligious kibbutzim do it for many reasons. It's infinitely better than humans doing it. And the kibbutz adati had a real problem because the easiest solution was call in goyim. No, you don't want to be samach on goyim. When it comes to mechirat chametz, by definition, you have to be samach on goyim. You can't sell it to a Jew. So here you have to be very careful. As I told you, I always went for an erudite non-Jew, a professor, a principal of a high school, someone reliable, someone who you could explain what mechirat chametz is all about. But this story that happened to Reb Menashe Klein and happened to the rabbi asking him, right after Pesach, the guy doesn't show up. All right, there were two different eitzot. One was in front of two edim to give money, and they agree, and you give it to the guy, and we're buying it back, and we're giving this amount of money, and we're willing to give him more if he's not happy. Zachin Yadim Shalom Bafanov. The other one was stumped to say, we're ready to buy, we make a commitment, but it's not a happy situation. And nevertheless, everyone is going to run after Pesach. This seems to be, as you said, the Vilna Gaon, Jack said the Vilna Gaon made Havdalah over beer. To me, it's difficult to understand that because matzah is matzah, Ribbono Shel Olam. I hate when it becomes stale bread. But okay, you can't change the world. I'm unique in this respect. My family laughs at me. My grandchildren laugh at me. I hope someday, I already have big great-grandchildren, let them laugh at me. But they all know that I can eat matzah all year long, the happiest person alive. To me, it's Jewish bread, and anything Jewish is fabulous. But that was the shaila, and again, it's part of life. And that story with the guy. So I told you with Mechirat Chametz what happened with Rabbi Shach, the senior. That was the person I was Meshames and Mesharet and learning. And I'll never forget the Gentile that he's selling it to, who lives in his shul, was dead drunk until they found him, until they brought him to the rabbi's office and time is ticking away. You can suffer a heart failure. And here, when you're samach on goyim, it's not the happiest situation in the world. But this is an interesting topic, and it's a topic that Torah Vavoda dealt with. I wonder today what they have to say. I've yet to hear anyone say, take all your chametz, throw it out, go down to the river, pour out the bottles of scotch, rye, brandy, whatever you have that's chametz. I've yet to hear anyone say it. So when it comes to selling chametz, right there, ein breira. We have to. That's why God created goyim to help us. All right. Now, what we're coming to today is Mishnah Halacha, Chelek Yudchet, Siman Resh Tzadik. And here we're going to come later today. To me, it's one of the most basic statements that Rav Menashe Klein has ever made. And I don't know whether he fully appreciates how far-reaching and how basic his understanding is. And we'll try to understand it. And in a week or so, we will contradict it. You'll see how humans waver back and forth. Okay, what's the shaila? And I want to ask you a question. Everyone here was bar mitzvah. Tell me, what did you do the night you were bar mitzvah? For the sake of argument, it's Thursday night, Maariv. Friday is Yud Gimel Shana. Tell me, you davened Thursday morning. You made Birchat HaTorah. Now you're davening Maariv. Tell me, you're now chayiv the oraita. Thursday morning, you made bichat haTorah. Whatever you davened, whatever you did, was b'torat chinuch. What chinuch is, we'll discuss a little later, but it's certainly not your chayiv the oraita. You're a kid. A kid is not obligated in mitzvot. All right, obviously, Chazal understood you can't take someone in for 12 years and face 364 days. He doesn't do anything, and suddenly on the 365th day at night, we tell him, hey, sonny, now you got to do this and you have to do that. You have to do everything. You're chayav the oraita. You're becoming a bar mitzvah. Chazal understood there has to be chinuch. But tell me, do you know what went on in Brisk? Who remembers? Reb Chaim used to tell his sons, when you daven Mariv, be mechaven in Avat Olam for Birchat HaTorah. All of you know, if you forgot to say Birchat HaTorah and you finished davening Shachrit, so you said Ahava Rabba, you are Yotzei Birchat HaTorah B'diyeved. So if you're Yotzei B'diyeved, then at night, where you say the bracha right before Shema Yisrael, you'll be Yotzei Birchat HaTorah. And that's what Reb Chaim Brisker would tell his sons. I imagine the Rav told his son Chaim the same thing. I imagine Reb Ari Lichtenstein told his sons the night before their bar mitzvah, be mechaven to be Yotzei Birchat HaTorah, because in the morning when you said Birchat HaTorah, it was Bechinat Chinuch. Now you're Chayev the Oraita, so you need a new Birchat HaTorah for Shema Yisrael, for Divrei Torah. All right, this change. So this is a well-known Brisker story. We'll come back to this at the end, but this is Brisk, and this is a fact. I heard this from the Rav, I heard it from others. Reb Menashe Klein gets a Shaila, 1968. And someone named Harav Yaakov Eliezer Wurzberger. I don't know, it seems he knows him. He doesn't know him. Lamandalo Chasina, I didn't see you. It means I really don't know you. But Komachinon Yeheshmei Mavarech, he should be blessed. A beautiful introduction. And what is he asking him? Sfirat HaOmer. How many of you have a birthday during Sfirat HaOmer? Imagine you have a birthday the 20th day of counting Omer. For 19 days you counted, you are not chayav to count. Your whole counting is because of chinuch. Suddenly you become chayav. It's a different chiyuv. It's a different quality. The mitzvah has a different geschmackheit, if I can use a word I grew up on. Are you allowed to continue counting? Perhaps the first days don't count. You all know if you miss a day, you can't continue counting. The earlier days you counted as a minor. It is not the same obligation as a full adult. Do you continue counting? Or is an interruption? What you did before doesn't count, and now you can't start? Count without a bracha, you have no other solution. And this is the shaila that Reb Menashe Klein received. Now, the person asking this question was evidently not aware, but this very question is right in the Minchat Chinuch. And this is what I told you about the Minchat Chinuch, Reb Chaim. I'll never forget what the Reb said. I quoted to you last week. Reb Chaim hat machshir gevenet kekashid the Minchat Chinuch hakalatziana, and brought him into the Litvish world. With the Minchat Chinuch, if you have to have a halachic talk, on Parshat HaShavua, all you have to do is open up the Minchat Chinuch, take the mitzvot, or one of the mitzvot he discusses, and you will see how innovative, how seminal his mind, overwhelming with the questions he asked. And of course, the bris, this was fabulous, because this was Reb Chaim. You could see it this way, you could see it that way. You can be Masbir the Rambam this way, the Ravid this way. This was Reb Chaim, Machlokes Rishonim, Shnei Dinim. And here, the Minchat Chinuch's mind absolutely worked this way. Now, the mitzvah, and I just want to quote the Minchas Chinuch to you because there's a beautiful word here as well, and there's so much in the Sefer Chinuch that I want to quote the Sefer Chinuch to you. There's so much depth in the Sefer Chinuch. Mitzvah Shinvav, Mitzvah Sfirat Ha'omer. And first of all, you should know Sfirat Ha'omer Bisman Hazeh, according to the overwhelming majority of Rishonim, it's not a Chiyuv the Oraita, it's a Chiyuv the Rabbanon. Look into the Minchat Chinuch, V'nei Dat Rov HaRishonim, the Sfira Bizman Hazeh, She'ein Omer, Hu Rak the Rabbanon. With the Rambam, you may have a hard time trying to figure out what he really holds. You can check the sources. But this is the way we Paskin. A clear majority of Rishonim hold like this. Now, the Chinuch asked a very beautiful question. You look at it, it comes towards the end of the discussion where he tries to explain the mitzvah. And how do we count? How do we count? We count today is one day, 2 days, 3 days, 5 days, 20 days. Why not count? You hit 20 days, 29 days left. Why not count what's left? Why do we stress what we counted? Very simple question. And here you can build an entire world of hashkafa and theology. And he says so beautifully, what's the whole purpose of counting? We left Egypt, Pesach. But the ultimate fulfillment of Yetziat Mitzrayim is receiving the Torah al Hahar Hazeh, reaching Shvuot, reaching Maimer HaSinai. That's the ultimate fulfillment. That's the ultimate goal. That ultimately completes the Yetziat Mitzrayim. Yetziat Mitzrayim is physical freedom. Shavuot is spiritual freedom, spiritual greatness. And the Chinuch says, when you count, you want to show your achievement. It's like saying, I've already worked 1 day, 2 days, 10 days, 20 days. I'm building myself up. I'm preparing myself. I'm developing my abilities to be ready L'kabel et haTorah bi'ahava b'simcha. You want to stress your accomplishments, not that you are longing another 20 days, another 30 days, Baruch Hashem will climb Mount Sinai. No, that's not enough. We're counting the days we counted to indicate we're working, we're preparing ourselves. Beautiful thought, and we're getting ready to climb the mountain, lekabel et Torah Hashem bi'ahava. So that's the mitzvah, that's the chinuch, and he says, v'noheget mitzvah tzvirat homa dioraita v'choma kom b'scharim. It's for men bizman habayit sheyesham omer. When you have tzvirat omer, tzvirat omer. The hakrava, mitzvah taseh shez mangrama, it's a mitzvah dioraita, for men only. Umi the rabbanon, b'chomakom, v'afilu hayom she'ein omer, biglal avanoteinu. And even today, when we don't have the Omer, we can't bring the Karbanot, we can't be Kotzer the Omer, everything that happened when we had the Beit HaMikdash or Meid Al Tilo. So today it's only Inyan the Rabbanan. You look into the Minchat Chinuch, and he raises this very question. And a katan who becomes a gadol, a slave who was freed in the middle of these 7 weeks, and they started counting. Can they continue to count? Until now, their counting was only on a rabbinic level, but they were not obligated to count. The rabbis gave them permission to count. Chinuch for a katan. An eved has the right to do mitzvot like a woman. He can choose. He can do. He has choice. And if he chooses to do it, fine. We'll allow him to do it. But this becomes a chiyuv the minute he is freed. The minute he becomes a gadol. And are they allowed to continue? It's a different mitzvah. And he develops this idea. He remains like a tzarechiyun. If you're familiar with the Mitzvot Chinuch, his main purpose is not to reach an answer. It's to think. How do you view it? Is it really different? Or is he the same person? Is it only a rabbinic law? Afterwards too, it still remains a rabbinic law. Is his chinuch a rabbinic law? Is the Yevitz choosing a rabbinic advice to him or a rabbinic choice for him? And therefore, to continue counting, it's also rabbinic. Or no, the nature of the mitzvah changes. Before, he chose to do the mitzvah. Now, he's obligated to do the mitzvah. So this is the Mitzvot Chinuch. He throws it out, and Rav Menashe Klein says to the person asking, your question is already in the Mitzvot Chinuch. And Rav Menashe Klein himself goes on to discuss it, different points of view. For instance, what do we mean by a mitzvah of chinuch? A child should be taught to do mitzvot. Tell me, who has that obligation? The father. Could very well be that when a child does mitzvot, he has no kiyum whatsoever. The kiyum is his father. His father has the right obligation. L'chanecholto. If that's the case, it's two completely different counts. Kol zman he was a minor, his counting is for his father. His father gets the credit. He's now an adult. He has to start counting. He can't. It's a different type of count. He never began. And if you don't begin, you can't continue. This is Sfira Ta'oma. Or no, Chinuch may be the father's obligation. But when a 9, 10, 11-year-old kid counts, does a mitzvah, observes, makes a bracha, the kid is doing it. The kid has the kiyum. The father may have been the one who brought it about, but it's that little boy who's doing it. It's his kiyum, a kiyum of a youngster doing a mitzvah. If that's the case, he's allowed to count. When he becomes an adult, it's still the same individual counting. And Rabbi Nasha Klein, very fascinating. This is his thinking. This is what he throws out. This is what he says. This is the machloket achronim. A lot of achronim, you'll see sources, have played with this question. It's an intellectual challenge. It beckons to you if you have an inquisitive mind, and you can see it either way. All right? Then he raises a very interesting question. Look at the Rambam. It's a very interesting Rambam. You can spend a lot of time on this Rambam. What does he mean? Hilchot Korban Pesach, Perek Hey, Halacha Zayin. I just want to check that that's a Chet and not a Hey. No, he has here Perek Hey. What do you say, Yomo? That's a Hey? Perek Hey, Halacha Zayin. What's the Rambam? Gesh Gaya Ben Pesach Rishon Le Pesach Sheni. V'chein katan shehigdil ben shnei psachim chayavim la'asot Pesach Sheni v'yim shachatu alav v'rishon patur. Look what this Rambam is saying. A kid grew up between Pesach Rishon to Pesach Sheni. Is he chayav in Pesach Sheni? The Rambam says yes. But the Rambam says this is only if they didn't count them in on an animal Pesach Rishon. What does that mean? All of you know that the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach is based upon families. And you're allowed to count in not only males, females, children, everyone is counted into the Korban Pesach. Everyone was involved in Yetziat Mitzrayim, Kulam Hayu Baltoh Neis. And if they counted the kid for Pesach Rishon, he's not obligated to bring a Korban the Pesach Sheni. So what do you see from here? A kid started counting Omer. He was a katan, but it counts. If this Rambam is correct, then there's no shaila. Absolutely, let the kid continue. What he did, the Pesach Rishon counts. What he counted as a katan counts. And it's just natural he should continue when he reaches the age of Bar Mitzvah. And Rav Menashe Klein brings this as a strong proof that a young man can start counting, can continue to count, and he never has to worry that his chiyuv, his status, his mamad changes in the middle. And this is a very fascinating Rambam, if that's the pshat in the Rambam, and this young man can certainly count without any problem whatsoever. And he goes on and he raises the question, a kid counting, how do you let him make a bracha? How do you know he won't stop in the middle? How do you know if perhaps he'll stop in the middle retroactively? The bracha he made become levatala. The whole purpose of counting is to pick up at the end when he is an adult. And of course, Rav Menashe Klein says, we don't have to be chayshish for this. Kid starts counting. Kid will be reliable. He shows he's reliable. And Rav Menashe Klein quotes tshuva, very interesting. What if someone is very ill, and the doctors tell him you have 1 week to live, 2 weeks to live, 3 weeks to live, but they give him no hope that he will survive the 7 weeks of counting the Omer? Is he allowed to start counting? And all the Achronim agree, yes, he is allowed, because Today he's alive. This is the mitzvah. What's going to happen 3, 4, 5 weeks from now doesn't affect his obligation at this moment in time. And of course, who says he will die? Maybe the Ribbono Shel Olam will have pity on him and there will be a healing process. He will survive and count all 7 weeks. And if this is the case, the kid can start counting, a sick person can start counting, and we don't have to worry that he will stop in the middle. But nevertheless, this is an interesting question. It challenges the mind. And Reb Menashe Klein says, I thought of something else. What about if a kid crosses the dateline? Before he crossed the dateline, he celebrated his bar mitzvah on the plane. Crosses the dateline, he's now lost the day. He's back where he started from, and he never hit bar mitzvah. This is similar to the shaila that Eretz Chamdan had to deal with. You're flying over land here at Shabbos, and in a minute you're going to be in a land where it's Friday. How do you deal with it? How do you deal with these questions? Here, the kid status not just changes, it changes back and forth. How do you deal with it? My dear students, in the last paragraph, Reb Menashe Klein says something very profound, very important, and very basic. He says, after dealing with this problem back and forth, do you continue counting? Don't you continue counting? The kid, his status changes. The servant, his status changes. A convert, you can go on. Status changes. The Rambam, Korban Pesach, very fascinating. And here, the dateline. What an example. You're bar mitzvah the day before, and a day later you're back to the day before. Your bar mitzvah is yet to come. The last paragraph of Menashe Klein says, V'lo emanem yilichtov masha'al libi. He says, I can't hold back from writing what I really think. Perhaps these questions are not part of Torah thinking. Torah thinking, Torah was given to normal individuals living in a circumscribed world that works a certain way. The moon comes out at night, the sun comes out by day, there are various seasons, there is a reality to life, and lahalacha, we have to do what is normative. Hein tzivu v'hein tzivu, hu tziva v'hu tziva. God commanded certain things, and this is what you have to do. The Chachamim gave us certain obligations. It has to be done within a realistic human sense. Tell me, if we would paskin lahalacha, that a kid who becomes an adult during the 7 weeks of Sfira, and we would be posek that the kid stops counting in the middle, this is not logical. If this is the case, then God should make a world where no male babies are born during Sfira. If this is the halacha, then I'm paraphrasing Reb Menashe Klein. We should only have girls from the second day of Pesach till Shavuot, so no bar mitzvah boy would be cut off in the middle. And Reb Menashe Klein is saying, God commanded a person to count. A kid has chinuch, he starts counting. He becomes a bar mitzvah, absolutely he should continue counting. And what Rabbi Menashe Klein says here is halachically very basic to our thought, to the dynamics of halacha, to the logic of halacha. God commanded, and this is the way God built the world. The sage is obligated, but this is the way the world works. Before you're a slave, now you're a free man. You started counting Olma? Absolutely continue. The young man? Absolutely continue. And you can go on and on with this concept. Doesn't this take you back to the Gemara where they put down Pampadita, that their chakira, their shilas, putting a pin through the needle, as they used to say in the European yeshivat, an elephant through a little hole. Does the hole become bigger or the elephant smaller? Okay? These are beautiful chakirat, but this does not affect the halakhic reality. The world is a world, reality is reality, humans are humans, and Baruch Hashem, how many of you were born between Pesach to Shavuot? Raise your hands. And if you were born between Pesach to Shavuot, of course, you count Omer, you daven, you act natural. All right, a little chumrah like being mechaven in Avat Olam, ain't a mala v'yena morid. But something major, giving up brachot, chas v'chalila. Now, and this is Reb Menashe Klein, that statement, you'll see, heim amru v'heim amru. And he says, this applies to all brachot and basic halacha and understanding. Tell me, there's a very, very difficult shaila that in modern times has become very real. Achronim deal with it. A guy named Rakefet once spent a whole year on the international dateline in the Kollel. I don't know whether those shirim are recorded. It's really many decades ago. Yomo, don't wander too far, because Yomo just walked out and I live in fear of... They said they fixed the Wi-Fi in the room, but it's not so well organized here. People are ill, people are sick, Torah Shragar is in quarantine. We're functioning with miracles. And I don't know whether Shurim are on Torah, but I spent the whole year on international datelines, a very interesting shaila. It has very interesting repercussions. What do you do about Yom Kippur in Japan? You all know the story that I still shake when I mention it, that Rav Chenich Mishman told me when I was a 13-year-old kid, a 12-year-old kid, but I was smart enough to understand that this is a major story he's telling me. And he told me the story of his friends in Mir, who were very frum and didn't want to get involved with the whole shaila of Yom Kippur in Japan, whether it's a Sunday or that year was Shabbos or Sunday, the whole machlokes, the Chazon Ish and the other poskim, and didn't want to fast 2 days. And they didn't leave, they had a visa, the simple Sukihara visa, but they didn't leave with everyone else. By the time Sukkot passed, it was impossible to leave. God have mercy, ultimately the Nazis killed them. You know, they were overrun, Germany overrun, Russia, independent Lithuania, etc., etc. So the international dateline is a tremendous shaila. There's a Kuzari, Yerushalayim, the center, the Gemara and Rosh Hashanah, the 18-hour difference. What does all this mean? Lahalacha, you should know, we've gotten the shaila a few times in Gurs. And David Miller, I remember once he got a call and he said, Rav Rakefet will answer. And I'll tell you what I answered. I ultimately followed Rav Menashe Klein. You'll see a similar concept in Rav Menachem Kasha. You all know his Shelet and Shuvah. He was an Adam Gadol, Rav Kasha, the Torah Shlema, but he was a Gaon in Shas and Poskim, a photographic memory. I had the schud of meeting him twice and speaking with him and learning at a time when you needed protexia to meet him, but that was I had the connection through Reb David Silva, the son of Reb Lezer, because Reb Lezer helped raise funds to publish the Torah Shleima. So if you look into Reb Menachem Kasha, he says something very basic. If there would be a dateline problem, wouldn't the Torah mention it? I mean, this is very basic. A Jew is traveling. When does he observe Shabbos? And Reb Menachem Kasha paskened lahalacha that ultimately there is no dateline. And what do we say? B'chom moshevoteichem. That Shabbat is what the Jews observe in that locality. You can't come in and make cheshbonot and suddenly all the Jews are observing Shabbos on one day and you're observing it on another day. It's like someone lost in the Midbar, so you all know the Gemara has to start counting 7 days and observe the seventh day. Once he gets back to a yeshuv, he finds out what the real Shabbat is and he joins everyone else. And Reb Menachem Kasha paskened lahalacha that Shabbos is what the local community observes. And that thinking and his whole tshuva, and he was a London and understood mathematics and astronomy and dateline. It's not a simple matter. You have to have a map in front of you and see it with your own eyes, or a globe and see what's happening, because at a certain point there must be a new day beginning. You just can't go on traveling the same day. And that's what he paskened. La halacha, I'll tell you what I paskened. If you're traveling, so the first Shabbat you arrive, you observe Shabbat like the local community, b'chom moshevoteichem, and the next day or the day before, whichever way you're coming from, the dateline problem, you don't do malacha d'oraita. Give cover to the fact that you left your community and now it's 7 days later. For you, it's a personal mini Shabbos. But if you're there another week, I mean, if you're settling there, then the achat kama v'kama, you're part of the community, and from the second week on, you observe Shabbat like everyone else with no difference whatsoever. And this is Reb Menachem Kasha's psak. He's in this, there were others who agreed or disagreed slightly, but it carries the day, because none of us can be overly smart. Lo nitna Torah l'malchei hasharet. None of us can achieve the impossible. There's a reality to life. And Torah was given within this reality. And on this level, Reb Menachem Kasha and Reb Menashe Klein are both paskening exactly the same way. Reb Menashe Klein, all right, you're dealing with Sfirat HaOmer. I'm not overwhelmed. It's a shaila of a rab of a right. It's a shaila of the right in the sense of a bracha of atala. But Reb Menachem Kasha was dealing with international dateline with Shabbos. And wow, when you're dealing with that, you're dealing with the oraita. But nevertheless, lo nitna Torah l'malach hasharet, we're only humans. And this is the way he ended off the tshuva. And fine, I don't want to minimize brisk. I've given that same advice to grandchildren who became bar mitzvah boys. But I recognize it's a chumrah. It's easy enough with a bracha at night and have a different kavanah or an added kavanah. But on major issues, you have to take Reb Menashe Klein very seriously. All right? The chakirat are very enjoyable. This was the minchat chinuch. This was his contribution. This is why Reb Chaim loved him. But on psak, one has to take the concept, this is the world, this is the way God created it, and we have to be able to live l'kavod u'l'tiferet within this creation. Okay, ad kan. Interesting. It may also, I'll tell you, if you want to go a little bit deeper, it may also reflect upon the great chasm between the Litvish yeshiva world and the Hasidic yeshiva world. I think Moshe Lichtenstein also alluded to this in his interview in Makor Rishon, with Moshe Lichtenstein, I should say. And, you know, there's a big difference the way we learn. In the Litvish Welt, Amkut, depth, is very important. It reaches the point where if you do 25 blot a year, I remember when I was a Rebbe in the yeshiva in YU in New York, if I did 25 blot a year, it was an achievement. We all did with Rambam, with depth. I can tell you something else. Did you ever learn Agada? Whenever you had Agada, you skipped. I remember when Reb Mendel Zaks, it was when I was teaching Psachim, so there was an Agadic section, and I taught it. And Reb Mendel Zaks, when he gave the Bechinen, he saw that kids knew the Agada. He was, I don't know if he was happy, but he was impressed, if you understand what I'm saying. And all that we skipped, because in Yeshiva Shevelt, Nushim and Zikin, and they had to go out of their way. Rebbeim, I'll give you an example. In Mir Yeshiva in 1930, how many of you were learning in Mir in 1930? I was there in Mir. And Reb Lazy Yehuda Finkel announced that anyone who learns, you can correct me exactly what was required, I think it was the three Bavas and the Gittin and Kedushin, or it could be Yevamot and Gittin. You had to learn in 1 year and take a Bechina. And anyone who could do that and pass the Bechina would get a $50 gift. $50, 1930 in Poland, was like my telling you today, you're going to get $30,000 if you can learn those Masechtot and pass a Bechina. What was the whole purpose of it? To get a little Bekiyot. That the yeshivas were going slowly with amkut, with understanding, tells with the Tzais HaChayshin. They used to boast in tells that when you walked out of the yeshiva and you went into the woods near surrounding tells, you smelled the Choshin, the Tzais HaChayshin in the flowers, in the grass, the reach of the Tzais HaChayshin and the netivot. And all right, this is beautiful. But Bekiyot, there's a lot more to Shas than just Nushim Nezikin in 25 blot a year. So they instituted that in Mir. And by the way, my Rebbe, Reb Noach Bornstein, was one of the winners of the $50 bill in 1930. There are others, names that float around, but Reb Noach, I can tell you, absolutely was one of the winners. The Hasidic world is very different. They learn Gemara, the Litvakim make fun of them, say, up dabin in the Gemara, like we say, Ashrei, Ashrei, we move on quickly, mumbling, bumbling. The same thing they said about the Hasidim, they learn the Gemara, they daven up the Gemara, but they learn, they cover blot, they learn Lahalacha, they kids 12, 13 years old are learning Chulin. In the Litvish Welt, you didn't touch Chulin till you were ready to get smicha and go into the rabbinate to become a shtat rav, to give hashkacha, to know what shchiter is about. It's a very big difference. Chassidish kids never skipped Agadah. Agadah, there you have hashkacha, you have warmth, you have inspiration. You can't just skip the Agadah. It's a basic part of the Gemara, basic part of Shas, Agada. It supplements the Shas. It complements the Shas. See, so there's a very big difference between a Hasidic approach and a Litvish approach. But Reb Menashe Klein here, I would say, is telling us a much more Hasidic approach. These are pilpulim. It's nice questions. It sharpens the mind. But he says, I'm not happy about this lahalacha. Lahalacha, you have to deal with the real world. And we grew up in it, we live in it, we can't rise above it. Lo nitna Torah l'malachei Asherei. This is Reb Menashe Klein. I'm going to show you next week how he absolutely contradicts himself. And not only does he contradict himself, but Mori Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. I'm going to tell you a whole conversation between David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Domo, and his Rebbe Mufak, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, but that's next week. But the Yesod I said today is absolutely right. And even though I'll show there's a bit of a contradiction, that contradiction I'll explain to. Yom Kippur is Yom Kippur, and fortunately, even Golda Meir said, and I quote her, Golda was prime minister when we came in Aliyah, and Erev Yom Kippur, she would give a talk to the nation, and one time she said a few things that I quote and re-quote. She says, this is not what I want to talk about today or next week, but one quote was fabulous. I can never forgive the Arabs for turning our boys into killers. In other words, here we had to take nice Jewish boys, develop an army, and the whole purpose of the army, Habola Hagecha, Hashkein V'Hago. Golda also said that Jews, Israelis, who don't feel Yom Kippur are no longer Jews. And she said something very profound there, unfortunately, very true. Another statement attributed to Golda was, we tried to raise a generation of Apikarsim, and all we raised was a generation of Ami Haaretz. And the truth of the matter is, Golda represents the tragedy and the greatness of Zionism. The greatness, what they achieved. We're sitting here because of them. The tragedy that Golda's generation let everyone be an apikairis, and all we wound up with is North Tel Aviv with an absolute no knowledge of yesteryear, no knowledge of a pasuk chumash with Rashi. All right, we'll come back to that when we hit Reb Menashe Klein contradicting himself. Another shaila now, very fascinating. Tell me, Rosh Hashanah, what's the most important mitzvah? Baruch atah Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam, she'akol yevod dvaro. What's the most important mitzvah on Rosh Hashanah? The Kiyat HaShofar? Chiyuv D'oraita, right or wrong? Tell me. So long davening Rosh Hashanah. I'm not talking this year. This year, everyone started very early outdoors, ended quickly. It was, my wife says she's still waiting for Pesach. And I say, halavai, we should have Pesach next year and start the cycle again. Okay, but in a normal year, Rosh Hashanah, it's a long davening, right or wrong, Shachris, the Piyut, Kriyas HaTorah, Haftorah, all that goes with it. And then Musaf, Tekiyah, 100 Kailat, Chazaretz Hashatz, Musaf, I don't know if you can, I don't know, it takes me 25 minutes, a half hour to finish Tefillat Musaf and Rosh Hashanah. The whole history and philosophy, theology of the Jewish people is there. The psukim. Wow, wow. No, we're only humans. We just spoke about Lunit the Torah Lamalachei Hasharet. How many of you have the feeling you're davening Shabbos morning and already, as you finish the Haftorah and you're ready for Musaf, you're dreaming already about making Kiddush, Bissel Schnapps, Brenfen, a Shtickle Herring, some good cake. By the way, herring, it turns out, is very healthy. So don't think it would. Maybe that's why they had long life in Europe, despite their meager diet. But the shtickle herring, they would get in shul every day when there was a hilula. Wow. You said, tell me, can you make kiddush before Tfilat Musaf Tkiyat Shofar on Rosh Hashanah? Now you think about that. The truth of the matter is, there was a tremendous machlekes in Achronim, Can you make Kiddush? The shul, tell me, in Grus, do they make Kiddush Yomo? Do they make Kiddush on Rosh Hashanah? Yomo is thinking. Tell me, Mark, when you learned here, do you remember, was there Kiddush or not? Either shake your head or go the other way. You're also trying to, there was, you say, what there was? I don't know if Rabbi Miller allows it. My memory is that in the Litvishi Yeshivat, they did make Kiddush before Shofar. And here you get involved in a very interesting question.
Tinker Miller tries to make sure that davening ends before Chatzos.
So did they make Kiddush or they didn't make Kiddush?
I don't think so.
They did?
I'm not sure, but I don't think so.
Yomuth doesn't think so. I don't think so. I think Rabbi Miller goes with the Shita not to make Kiddush. But this is a real serious question. The truth of the matter is that there are many mitzvot you're not allowed to eat before. You've all learned brachot, psachim. Tell me, are you allowed to eat before you daven mincha, before you daven mariv? Right or wrong? That was the very first shaila I asked the Rav. I'll never forget it. I was a high school kid, and I looked up the Soloveitchik phone number in the Manhattan phone book, and I called the house. I don't know where I had the chutzpah, and I thought I would get Reb Aaron Soloveitchik. It was the apartment of Rebbetzin Pesha Soloveitchik across the street from the yeshiva. She was a widow, and Reb Aaron lived with her. And I wanted to ask Reb Aaron, who I knew. And instead, when I asked for Rabbi Soloveitchik, the Rav gets on. And I told the Rav, I'm a high school kid, an MTA. And when I get home, my mother wants me to eat right away. I'm tired. And I would like to leave a note. I have no one to tell. Remind me to daven Mariv. Can I leave a petek, what we call in my Hebrew, a note. I don't know if there's a better word in English. A little note saying Mariv. And this is an interesting shaila. No, you won't know the halachas. You have to tell someone, remind me to daven Mariv. And the Rav said to me, as long as you remember to look at the note, leave it in our place where you will remember, that's fine. And I'll never forget that psak. And the truth of the matter is, I davened a lot of times in a place in Shari Chesed where they daven early Friday night. And they start in with a chumrah that you can't make Kiddush right before sunset or what. OU has passed this chumrah around. And I looked into it. It has to do, when you reach a certain point, you're not allowed to eat before you say Kriyat Shema, you say Kriyat Shema, the Oraita. All you have to do is leave a note. And what I do Friday night when I daven early, in normal times, I would daven with Herbie Maltz. We sit next to each other. And what do you do? So I would always leave, when we'd set the Shabbos table, I'd leave a little sitter on the table. It's a reminder to say the Shema. So tell me, wouldn't that be an easy solution? You're worried you're not going to blow shofar. You're worried that you won't hit Musaf. Here, what's the big deal? You don't need a note. You don't need anything. It's a whole kehillah, a whole congregation. Everyone is in the same boat. It's like telling your friend, remind me to daven Mariv, remind me to daven Mincha, remind me to say Kriyat Shema. What do you mean, remind me? The whole kahal is there getting ready to daven Musaf, to hear shofar. What's the problem? Ah, so here I want to deal with the Gemara. We'll see the tshuva in a moment. Let's first do the Gemara. Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Lamed Bet, Amid Bet, 32b, right at towards the end. Quoting the Mishnah, Ha'ovel lefnei chatreve biyontef shel Rosh Hashanah ha'sheni matkia u'bishat halel ha'rishon makri et ha'halel. And you all know this Mishnah, that Rosh Hashanah, where do you blow shofar? with Musaf. The second Baal Tefillah, he's the one shofar is interconnected post Kriyat HaTorah and Haftorah. That's when you blow shofar. Hallel, you say, as part of Shacharit, I don't have to tell you, we just had Sukkot, everyone knows, as a matter of fact, in my shul, I daven, and I've seen this in a lot of Ashkenazic shuls, once you pick up the lulav and etrog for Hallel, right afterwards you say Hoshanot. You don't want to have to pick it up again and take it out of its package again. So Hoshanot, which I remember in America we used to say at a later point in davening, here, right after the Hallel, may inyan le'inyan bo'to inyan with the lulav and etrog. So fine, this is what the Mishnah says. So the Gemara asks, Maishna Shani Matkiya, Mishum the Robam Hadrat Melech. So the Gemara says, why do we blow the shofar at Musaf, not at Shachrit? So the first answer of the Gemara is again a very sad answer because it's a reality. Rov Am Hadrat Melech. What does that mean? I remember davening in a young Israel in a very prominent Torah community. And that young Israel, the main minion, by the end of Shachrit, there were 400 people. By the end of Kriyat HaTorah, 500 people. Musaf, 800 people in the shul. And unfortunately, we Jews on Shabbos, on Yontif, we're not on time. Davening, yes, important, but our attitude is, take it lightly. Yeah, the Rabbanim, guys like Rakefet, they take it seriously. They're there early, on time, davening, concentrating. This particular young Israel, during Musaf already Chazaretz HaShatz, there was more noise than at Yankee Stadium when Joe DiMaggio hit a long drive into the left center bleachers. And let me tell you, that was an achievement in noise. I know you'll now recognize the shul, but what happened was a Talmud of mine took a breakaway, established the shul nearby, where everyone had to sign that they will not talk during davening. And he has been so successful that the young Israel I'm talking about, I'm told today, tremendous decorum, because their competition has led the way. So, but you see from the Gemara, this is a reality. Jews wander into shul, matov manoyim. Let's wait till they're all there. Berovam Hadrach Melech. By the way, this is a serious question, Hadrach Melech. Are you allowed to break up a minion at night? You're davening Rabbi Grinstein, all your rabbis across the world. They have a Marav minion, 25 people. At night, they're 2 yard sites. Are you allowed to break up into 2 different minyanim? Let me tell you, this is not a simple question. Some people who have dealt with it, Achrayim we're talking about, Barovam Hadrat Melech, you don't break a minyan up. The yard site is a yard site. So you say Kaddish, one guy says one Baruchu, another guy will say the second Baruchu. Divide what you can. But Barovam Hadrat Melech, the average balabas today will not buy that. 2 minyanim, Rabbi, I'm a chiyav, he's a chiyav. They split up. Halacha l'maisa, most people split up. But I can tell you there's one Talmud Chacham, a YU Mismach, a PhD from Harvard, Davin's with me in Ohel Rivka. He's very upset, says, no, Rovam Hadrach Melech, you don't split up. So that's the Gemara's answer. So the Gemara says, a very simple question. If this is the case, that Rovam Hadrach Melech, why Halal at Shacharit? Why must Halal be at Shacharit? Fine. You have to say Halal on Yontif. What's wrong saying it at Musaf? What's wrong the second Baal Tfilah, he should be the one to say it? A wonderful question. Ihachi Halel Nami. If that's the case, let me just read it properly. Barobamich Nami. So let Halel also be said with Musaf. And no, now they give a different answer. Halel Zrizin Makdimin Lemitzvot. This is the whole klal. We learned it out from this week's Sedra, Vayera, Avram Avinu, Zrizin Makdimin Lemitzvot. This is why a Brit Milah. When do we do a Brit Milah? Early in the morning, not later in the day. In order to do, people already do it later in the day because people are at work. They can give many reasons. But lachatchila, a Brit Milah, 8 o'clock in the morning, 9 o'clock in the morning, Zrizin Matimin Lemitzvot. So Halel, Zrizin Matimin Lemitzvot. So logically speaking, the Gemara asks again, if that's the case, Shofar should be Bishachret, Zrizin Matimin Lemilcha, Mitzvot. The same thinking should apply, the same logic. So the Gemara answers, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Bishat Gezerat HaMalchut Shanu. And what does this mean? Gezerat HaMalchut, Gentiles persecuting us. So, look into Rashi, that what is it talking about? Ayavim Gazru Shalo Yitka'u V'hayu Odom Lechem Kol Shei Sha'ot the Kates Tvilat Shachret, the Kachaviril that Koabim Musafim. Very interesting, Rashi, that our enemies decreed that we can't blow shofar. So they stayed around till the end of Shachret. When they were gone, they blew the shofar at Musaf. It's not a simple pshat, because if I know the Gestapo, Yumach Shmam B'Zichram, and they agreed that you can't blow shofar, and we have, you know, memoir literature. I spoke about this when I gave my shirim, the many years I devoted to the Holocaust. People risked their lives to blow shofar. Well, if they stayed around, these Sonei Yisrael, they'll stay around Shachret, Kriyas HaTorah, and Musaf. What do you mean? So it seems what Rashi is saying is they got tired. 6 hours, they stayed around to the end of the sixth hour. At that point, they saw they didn't blow shofar until now. The heck with it. We're tired. We have to eat. We have to take a break. We need a cup of coffee. And they went away. And then the Jews blew shofar. I'll tell you, Rashi's pshat, I'm going to share with you what I couldn't talk about until 2002. Rashi's pshat, at first, always appeared to me, a Sonei Yisrael is a Sonei Yisrael. He's going to stay, and if worse comes to worse, they'll take turns. You 2 hours, me 2 hours, this one 2 hours. They're not going to blow shofar. They're not going to do any mitzvah. We hate the Jews. I never really understood Rashi's pshat. However, I have to tell you, in Russia, our Sirovnikim, our contacts there, told us the best time to operate is towards the end of the afternoon. Why? Because they told us that's when the KGB goes off duty, and until the new shift comes on, there can be an hour and a half. No one is rushing. This one is taking a cup of coffee, and ain't hachinami. I'll never forget in 85 when we reached Leningrad and we have to go to Yitzhak Kogan's house, and he had moved since we saw him in 81, and it's exactly what we did. We couldn't use telephones. It was a very difficult period. It was the storm before the lull, not the lull before the storm. They were arresting prisoners of Zion wholesale. People were going to Siberia wholesale. Who would dream that 2 years later everything would start to cave in? But we couldn't use telephones at all, not public telephones either. because they were convinced that they were listening, not just private, but public as well. So whenever we get to Leningrad, we're in the hotel, and we're not saying a word to each other. I'm looking at a map, and I'm signaling my wife, I have figured out how to get to Yitzchak's house. But I signal, we gotta wait another hour till the sun starts to set. Then the KGB is not active, and believe it or not, we got there, discovered the house. I mean, today you tell the story, everyone's a wife, but you didn't have a GSP, am I using the right thing? I forget, you don't have a Waze system, but they don't understand what it was like. And in Russia, there were no maps, the street maps were always misinforming you. They were afraid of tourists, of spies, don't ask what went on. But Baruch Hashem, we got there following Rashi's advice. So it could be, Rashi is right, that as much as this SS guy, this Gestapo, this KGB guy, would hate the Jews, but a cup of coffee is a cup of coffee. And that's what Rashi says. If anyone has a better pshat, you can tell me. But this is the way I understand Rashi, because it's so hard to understand. They went away at the end of Shacharit. Why didn't you wait a little longer? But all right, gedul, patience. This much, yes, no further. Tosfos is a little different. Look into Tosfot, that Tosfot says that they did stay around the whole time. And these were Yavim Shenesvu, and these were people who were ready to fight with them, to kill them. But when they saw the whole davening, Latachtik nu tekiyatu brachat b'musaf dechazu dekaru b'kriyat shma mitpalalim v'korim b'torah v'chazrinu mitpalalim v'tolkim amruni m'seichem einan iskenu klome b'chukeichem u'betorateichem. In other words, what they said was, wow, these people are serious. Vic, look how long they're davening. A guy goes to church. I grew up in a Catholic neighborhood. Fabulous religion. You can do any sin in the world. And then you go to confession and you tell the priest, I did this, I did that. He tells you how many Hail Marys to give, say, recite. Maybe to give charity. You're finished. You walk out the happiest guy alive. What a religion. Masses, 9, 10, 11 on Sunday morning. Pay your nickel. Take your choice. The whole mass, less than 1 hour. What a religion. Fabulous. And then the goyim looked at us. Min daven shachris, and we say kriyat shema, and we read the Torah, and we read the haftorah, and suddenly they blow shofar, and everyone is crying. Serious? They daven musaf. What a musaf. Even if you give a goy a translation, he'll say this is... Take me a year to read this, to understand this. Aye, then the Gentiles said, no, this is not a threat to us. They're not at war. They're not ready to fight us. They're not blowing shofar to rally the troops. They are davening. This is part of their chukim, part of their dedication. Kol hakavod to the Jew. What a davening. Wow. And they walked away. It's a different pshat than Rashi. Maybe both are correct. Fascinating. Fascinating. No, then there's one tremendous question. Tell me, Dov, when you blew shofar in Primo Levi area, tell me, were any goyim around? Was anyone looking at you? Was anyone checking you? Elliot, were they there to put you down, to maledict you? We blew shofar. I was the makri. I stood at the 10 people were inside the shul, 20 people outside. We started again today with that nohag. And I was makri. With the door open, I was still in the shul. The Baal Tokeya was outside, and he's blowing, and oh, what was going on? And who's looking? Who cares? Let the Jews do what they want. Even in America, with all that's going on today, I don't believe anyone objected to blowing shofar. If so, we have a very simple question, Herbie. Why didn't we return the shofar to Shachrit where it belongs? Zrizin makdim in lemitzvah. That's critically important. Let it be Shachrit. Oh, and we would solve so many problems. Then there'd be no Shaila. Jump for joy. Make Kiddush. Don't starve. Don't make it such a long davening till you get a chance to eat. It's Rosh Hashanah today. Rejoice. And Tosfos says, he asked the very question, V'yafagav shebatla gezeirat ha-malchut lo avdinan kudim yikara. The chayshinan shemayakza hadavah lekil kula. And this, those of you who have learned Masechet Beitzah, Yontif Sheni, all of you know this is a basic principle in Yiddishkeit. Once we have changed a certain status, a certain minhag, a certain practice, we don't go back to the original because we are apprehensive, we are worried. Maybe things will change. In this particular case, Gentiles will hate us. They won't want us to blow shofar. Keep it in Musaf. We'll be safer. They won't take offense. They'll see that it's davening. It's not enmity towards the Gentile world. The shofar is not part of an army, a maneuver. We don't change. Yontif Sheni, we'll go back to Kiddush Levana, Kiddush HaChodesh, I should say, by sight, by eye, and we'll need 2 days Yontif. We won't know for sure when the new moon was declared. And this is Tosfot. This is the, I wouldn't say it's a shtickel machloket between Rashi and Tosfot. Why put it into Musaf? But once we put the Kiyat HaShofar into Musaf, then it remains L'Dorei Dorot. And even in 2020, all of us blew shofar as part, an integral part of the post-Shachrit service. My dear students, we're going to have a very fascinating analysis here. I'm going to get you involved with a volume called The Rav, The World of Rabbi Joseph B. Soloveitchik. By the way, I see it's quoted twice in the past week's Torah tidbits. If you recognized it, the Rav, volume 1 or 2, the page, Rakefet. Okay, Baruch Hashem. What we're dealing with is Mishnah Halachot, Chelek Tetvav, Siman Kuf Pei Dalet. We'll pick up the Tshuva, the Shaila, the Tshuva, the Menashe Klein. Very fascinating. Has a very innovative, prolific mind. And next week, all being equal, we will perhaps reach going back to living normally. Rav Menashe Klein, the Rav, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik. The truth of the matter is, these are shirim that should go on the IOU list. 36,000 shekel or dollars linked to the shekel. We owe the Rebbe. You can't give it for nothing. Quoting the Gemara, a doctor who heals for nothing is worth nothing. You have to feel, wow, this is something, the Rav, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, wow. The IOU list, Mark, nothing to worry about, Mark and Mark. The Rebbe never collected a penny from any student. Never in the past, and Be'ezrat Hashem, never in the future. Ma'ani b'chinam, Afatabachinam, the Gemara Nedarim. To reiterate, What did we do today? Okay, we dealt with the Minchat Chinuch, with the Shaila, with the Pilpul, with the Rambam, Pesach Rishon, Pesach Sheni. It's not simple there, because a lot of the commentaries on the Rambam, the Nosei Kelim, take issue with him, and there are the Gersot, because it is, if a kid grew up between Pesach Rishon to Pesach Sheni, well, he already celebrated Pesach Rishon, he did what he could. What's the halacha? Suddenly a Pesach Sheni comes upon him. Pesach Sheni is only those who had an obligation to Pesach Rishon and couldn't fulfill it. But this kid did whatever he could. All right, interesting, interesting Rambam. If you have a kid being bar mitzvahed between Pesach Rishon to Pesach Sheni, this would be a nice drasha to develop for him. Give it, you know, work it out with the kid, the Rambam, the Nosei Kelim. Very interesting. But halacha l'maisa, we went into the international dateline, and ein hachinami Torah, Reb Menashe Kasher, is very, very sharp. And he says, it's like Reb Menashe Klein is indicating, if this would be a problem, God should have decreed that no male is born between Pesach to Shavuot, only females. And Reb Menashe Kasher says that, and if there was really a concept here, God should have decreed it, because inevitably people are going to cross a dateline. But all right, la halacha l'maaseh is not simple, it, because you have the Chazon Ish Shita, but all right, we've paskened against him, everyone paskens against him, and it's not a simple matter. He held his ground at Dovrov Gedoli Yisrael, because they met, they discussed the issue in Yerushalayim, Rav Tukachinsky, Rav Herzog, others. These were Gedoli Yisrael, Rabbis Zalman Meltzer, etc., etc. And nevertheless, the Chazon Ish held his ground, and it resulted, halacha l'maaseh, as I told you, it caused lo aleinu yeshiva boys who didn't get out of Frumkeit, and ultimately they lost their lives in the Holocaust. The other shaila we introduced was eating before Tekiyat HaShofar, and this is where we'll leave off today. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat HaNoten LeYov Koach, at 9 o'clock, we're going to pick up exactly where we left off. And that takes us to the swing to the right, Yeshiva University we did. And I want to get involved with Turo briefly. It's an interesting topic, Turo. How it began, what it became, where it's at, and how it also, you deal with the swing to the right. I'll explain tomorrow, Turo vis-a-vis the Haredi world. And then we've now set the stage for the question that haunts us until today. It was just in the news again with the Jewish Agency, with the World Zionist Organization, Reform Conservative Synagogue Council, Board of Rabbis. It's an interesting question. I will try to be as objective as I can, because I personally am in a very extreme. I'm to the right of the right on that question. I was in the rabbinate. I grew up in America. I saw what happened to Jews, what Reform and Conservative created. So I have to tell you personally, I'm to the right of the right. But when I lecture on Jewish history, I'll try my best to keep my subjectivity out of it and try to present the issue as fairly as I can. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das wird dann ja. I'm watching the clock. We've run.
The recording has stopped.
Good. Open up. Are there any questions? Anyone? Mark Licht, are you saying something? I see a lot of people in front of me. I see many names I don't recognize. I apologize for not learning your names, but when we have a classroom again, perhaps God will enable us.
I'm not 100% sure about Rosh Hashanah and Kiddush, but when I was at Gruz, if we went downstairs for Kiddush, and we might have, it was because, four of us, so whatever happened was because of BMT. BMT said what was going on there.
And what did BMT do?
I'm not 100%. We might have gone downstairs for Kiddush.
No, you don't
I'm
remember.
A little
Maybe it's Whitey Horowitz who was makpid not to make Kiddush. Maybe. I know in the Litvashi Yeshiva, I believe they did make Kiddush. I'm trying to think what we did in Lakewood. and I can't recall. Isn't that something? I can't recall.
Is there something where Rav Henkin wanted Rav Schneer not to do it, but they had already been doing it
for a while. Correct. That's what I recall. That in Lakewood they did make Kiddush, but somehow I can't be certain. But the Litvashi Yeshiva, yes. But we'll see his tshuva. You'll see what he has to say. It's very fascinating, because he us is making Kiddush, and you'll see his reasoning. And it gets me involved with something from the Rav. But we'll leave it for next week.
Rabbi, I'll write the details to you, because it's more complicated. I don't want to bother everyone with it. But Baruch Shekivanti, they say that Rav Svi Pesach, also held in the Minhag HaMakom, is Machriya for the day one.
It makes sense. I want to tell you, that was the conclusion I reached, and I researched the topic thoroughly. I remember I gave shurim for over a year, and I really worked because that's not a topic we ever touched. You never came near not nushin, not nizikin, and it is a difficult topic. You have to have a mind that understands the globe, etc. But that's the conclusion I reached. And as I grow older and I learn more, I can tell you Reb Menashe Klein's approach, which certainly enforced Reb Menachem Kasher 100%.
The Minhag HaMakom is the Chazon Ish. When I was in New Zealand, the Minhag HaMakom is Rav Tuchinsky. I did hold the Sfeika D'Yomo on Melacha D'Oraisa on the other day, and in New Zealand, I was there two Shabbatos. I did old it the second, but I said to people, if I were living there, I would be olding that. But as long as I was there for two, I held the Sfeika the second week also.
Okay, Rav Tuchinsky's Pesach we spoke about in detail, and he had the advantage. He was a mathematician, as Rav David Shapiro was a math. They knew math inside out, astronomy. But halacha lemaisa, yesha mi lismoch, Rav Menashe.
I did have another Shiloh when I was in Hawaii, whether I should put on tefillin vitzina on Saturday because of Sfeika d'Oraisa. I spoke it over with the chaver who's a Rosh Yeshiva, and he said, no, I was interested if there's any shita that has to be a break, there has to be one day a week that you don't put on tefillin, if there's any Indian of that. He couldn't think of anything, so I didn't put it on, but when I was in shul Friday night, I'm talking to the Chabad Rav, and their shita is that you're all the Megamakamak.
That you ought to what?
Chabadra, I told him that I wasn't doing Melacha D'Oraisa. On Friday, he said to you, are you putting on tefillin tomorrow? I said, funny you should ask. I thought of the same thing, but the psak I got was not tefillin.
Okay, I hear.
But, Rabbi, I remember once why you took a trip. A class went to Japan, and when they got back, Rabbi David Horowitz went with them, and he gave a whole speech about how on Sunday they did all these things, you know, they didn't do any diuretas, they didn't write, they whatever. So he admitted, he said, of course, it's for chinuch, you know, and they're only there for a few weeks. So he said, you know, to show, you know, what it is, but he said if they were living in Japan and you had to go to work on Sunday, then of course they keep what they keep in Japan.
Right.
You know, which was with Rav David Horowitz.
Well, that's why I always said the first week you arrive, I can understand the tourist if you're there 2 weeks or for 2 weeks, but otherwise you can't separate from the Kehila, plain and simple. Rabbi Grinstein, do you understand what bothers me about flying out of Lod on Yantav Sheni? And that question, I have no solution. I have to ask the Rav. You see, if he says you can't fold a handkerchief in your pocket, it would indicate that Yantav Sheni begins the minute you cross the border. Of course, you can...
Or perhaps, as you said, Rabbi, Yantav Sheni begins when you reach a Yeshuv Yehudi.
Yeah, right, I understand. That's my question.
Not just the Shulchan Aruch. The Gemara says this.
Right, but the Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch and all, it's in relation to Malach if you do and they don't. But does it work the opposite way? Also, you have to remember the Svara. All right, you began the day Becheta. That's the whole Svara with the boat that lands. You began the day Be'isha. How do you change suddenly to Chul? And imagine they daven Shachris and Musaf Yantadik, and Mitcha they're going to daven Vachadik. It's an interesting question.
When you said it earlier, I thought that it's like Rosh Hashanah, the Beis HaMikdash way back when. and they started the day with Kiddushah, and then the Eidim came in.
Right,
that's
very good. But here it's different. It's because it's not a carbon involved. Wait, one second, Mark.
If you left London right after Shabbos, when you got to New York, it would still be Shabbos.
If you left...
If you took it at ST when they add them, it flies faster than the Earth's rotation.
You're talking about the Concorde.
After Shabbos, when you got to New York, if you were flying an average more than Mach 1, or a little more than Mach 1, you would get to New York, it would still be on the same Shabbos, so it's double jeopardy. Can you fly it for Shabbos?
Okay, but Shabbos, I'll tell you, Shabbos may be a little different than Yom Tov Sheni, because you observe Shabbos already. You can't say a person has to observe two Shabbatot. You observed, you're finished. You made Havdalah. But Yom Tov Sheni, it's a Yom Tov Sheni where you're landing, and you only had one Yom Tov. By the way, the story with my brother is classic. How this guy comes over to him in Yiddish, you know, it was native language Yiddish, and Gizene, I'm so hesitant to speak Yiddish, I don't know what you understand, what you don't understand, it's really unbelievable, but that's life today. But he came over to my brother, he saw my brother clean shaven, my nephew clean shaven, and with long beards, with bekishes, with the, and he figured, all right, my brother's a normal guy, as if to speak. And he says to him, and you can imagine the shock. So I told my brother, I'm ending off with this story. We got to clear the room. Wow, it's 1:45 already. By the way, I got to be very thankful. Yomo was very helpful. He beat up the person in charge of the Wi-Fi and the technical matters here. And he beat on him, and I beat on him, and Reb David Miller beat on him. And he told me, he's a very nice guy, by the way, a very capable guy. Born in Russia, perfect Russian, perfect English, married to an American girl. You might think he stepped out of Oceanside, I think she's from. And perfect Hebrew. He's a graduate of Machon Lev, Army, very capable. So we got to thank Danny. Yomo, will you thank Danny, please?
Yes.
Okay, good.
Wait, one second.
I want to tell my brother, one second. Now I lost it. One second. Let me just read.
About how he came up to your brother because he saw he was clean shaven. He said,
and he complained. One second. I told my brother a story. That slipped my mind. All right. If I recall, I'll tell it next week. I owe it to you.
I flew to Sydney, I missed Tu B'Shvat. I left on Tuesday. The next Shachris was Thursday. The only time it was Vaday Tu B'Shvat was at night when we landed in L.A. I said Shir Shoyom from Ma'ariv, bought some dried fruit and ate it there.
Wow. And you can't eat the dried fruit the wrong day.
And when did you eat the fruit and make a Shechiyanum?
I don't think there's proof that I could make a Shechiyanum. There's no eating yet.
Like when you got to Australia, retroactively, you probably found fruit there that you don't have anywhere else.
In Sydney, I also asked the Shiloh if I could take a ferry within, because if you go outside, you might be back to Shabbos. But this is within the land, and they said it shouldn't be a problem if you don't go, you're not going off the Abeshet when you're in the inland waterways.
Yeah. I want to tell you, I was in Australia, and I was very, very impressed with the general population. I don't think there's a country in the modern world, the contemporary world, where the people are so respectful. The drivers, they don't transgress. It's not like America or Israel where they hop, they go fast, they have no police around. I've seen a driver, I don't want to mention his name, until about 6 o'clock in the morning when there's not much traffic, he turns right on a red light. He says, no cops are around now, what harm can you do? In Long Island, you can turn right on a red light. In Florida, I think you turn right on a red light. In Australia, that could never happen. And that explains how there they beat the pandemic. They just came out of the lockdown, and they have less deaths than Israel and a much larger...
Is it New Zealand?
Australia is still pretty bad.
Less death.
But there's nothing to do in New Zealand, so they're not in the rush for anything.
New Zealand, it's, you know, New Zealand's like Australia in that respect. And I have to tell you, the police, it's also very interesting. All the lights, you have to press a button to change the traffic lights. Before Shabbos and Yontif, everything changes to automatic where the Jews live, the frum Jews, so that they can
in
cross
LA,
the streets.
In LA, it doesn't change, they give tickets. In some places in Pico, they adjusted it.
Mark, 1 second. And so the Jews should have no problem being Shomer Shabbos, and that's very, very impressive. In Borough Park, I saw with my own eyes, I'm walking to Shul to catch Mincha Mariv, and a devotee of mine is walking with me, and he comes from a civilized place out in the island, and he was flabbergasted, chassidim going through stop signs. You're dressed like a chassid, and not just one or two, three, four. We stopped, we looked, like minhag hamakom. You don't pay any attention to stop signs. If you don't see any cars, blew right through. And this is, you got to give credit. And we're suffering here what's going on in the Arab world with that, with the sheikh's funeral. Lahavdil May Abdullah was like the Pittsburgh Rebbe's funeral. You know what I'm talking about. And that mentality, it's beyond comprehension. How can you win? How can you beat this pandemic? And today, if you heard the news, the stores that are on the street, they're not allowed to open. They're going to open anyway. They don't, and you know, everyone says under their breath, if the Talmud Torah is opened and Rav Kanievsky's word was listened to, why can't we make our own psak? Well, if we live like that, we have here, it's beyond words. It's Ishaya Shabi and Evi Asev, Ishat Chaim Reu below. We're not going to survive. And you got to give credit to the government that with all this difficulty, at least you see, I can't say we conquered, but at least it's much better now. It all hinges on how we leave this lockdown. And halavai, we should be successful this time, not like the first time. Furthermore, you know that we're successful here. Take a look how the dollar linked in dread. Have you noticed that? I said the dollar linked to the shekel, not the shekel linked to the dollar. Kivanti bizar. All right, I'll try to think of what I told my brother. If not, I have to call him and ask him. Until we meet again and tomorrow morning in health and happiness, Rak Besora Tova Doleinu V'Kol Yisrael. Thank you so much for participating. Shavua Tov U'Mevorach Das V'Danya.